Om Abhyanatamadandasa Jananjana Salakaya Chaksulamidatam Jena Tasmai Sigurave Namaha Sichaitanamanu Vistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakatam Mayam Dadatitsva Pandantikam. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 5, Text Number 11. Tat Bhag Vishargo Janataga Viplavo Yasmin Pratislokam Apadavati Api Namhani Anantasya Yasho Ankitani Yat Shrinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Sadabaha Tat Vag Vishargo Janatagna Viplavo Yasmin Pratishlokam Abhadavati Api Namani Anantasya Yaso Nikantiyat Shrinvanti, Gayanti, Grinanti, Sadavaha Tadvag Vishago, Janatagna Viplavo Yasmin Prati Slokam Abhadavatyapi Namhani yantasya yasho kitani yat Shrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadavaha That Bhak vocabulary Visharga creation Janata the people in general Aga Sins. Viplava, revolutionary. Yasmin, in which. Pratislokam, each and every stanza. Abhadavati, irregularly composed. Api, in spite of. Namani, transcendental names, etc. Anantasya, of the unlimited Lord. Yashaha, glories. Ankitani, depicted. Yat, what? Shrinvanti, do hear. Gayanti, do sing. Grinanti, do accept. Sadhava, the purified men who are honest. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. On the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, forms, pastimes, etc., of the unlimited Supreme Lord, is a different creation, full of transcendental words directed toward bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. Purport. It is the qualification of the great thinkers to pick up the best, even from the worst. It is said that the intelligent man should pick up nectar from a stock of poison, should accept gold even from a filthy place, should accept a good and qualified wife even from an obscure family, and should accept a good lesson even from a man or from a teacher who comes from the untouchables. These are some of the ethical instructions for everyone in every place without exception. But a saint is far above the level of an ordinary man. He is always absorbed in glorifying the Supreme because, by broadcasting the holy name and fame of the Supreme Lord, the polluted atmosphere of the world will change. And as a result of propagating the transcendental literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam, people will become sane in their transactions. While preparing this commentary on this particular stanza of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have a crisis before us. Our neighboring friend, China, has attacked the border of India with a militaristic spirit. We have practically no business in the political field. Yet we see that previously there were both China and India, and they were both living peacefully for centuries without ill feeling. The reason is that they lived those days in an atmosphere of God consciousness, and every country over the surface of the world was God-fearing, pure-hearted, and simple, and there was no question of political diplomacy. There is no cause of quarrel between the two countries, China and India, over land which is not very suitable for habitation, and certainly there is no cause of fighting on this issue. But, due to the age of quarrel, Kali, which we have discussed, there is always a chance of quarrel on slight provocation. This is due not to the issue in question, but to the polluted atmosphere of this age. Systematically, there is propaganda by a section of people to stop glorification of the name and fame of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, there is a great need for disseminating the message of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world. It is the duty of every responsible Indian to broadcast the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the world, to do all the supermost good, as well as to bring about the desired peace in the world. Because India has failed in her duty by neglecting this responsible work, there is so much quarrel and trouble all over the world. We are confident that if the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam is received only by the leading men of the world, certainly there will be a change of heart, and naturally the people in general will follow them. The mass of people in general are tools in the hands of the modern politicians and leaders of the people. If there is a change of heart of the leaders only, certainly there will be a radical change in the atmosphere of the world. We know that our honest attempt to present this great literature, conveying transcendental messages for reviving the God consciousness of the people in general and in re-spiritualizing world atmosphere, is fraught with many difficulties. Our presenting this matter in adequate language, especially a foreign language, will certainly fail, and there will be so many literary discrepancies despite our honest attempt to present it in the proper way. But we are sure that with all our faults in this connection, the seriousness of the subject matter will be taken into consideration, and the leaders of society will still accept this due to its being an honest attempt to glorify the Almighty God. When there is fire in a house, the inmates of the house go out to get help from the neighbors who may be foreigners, and yet without knowledge, the language the victims of the fire express themselves in, and the neighbors understand the need, even though not expressed in the same language. The same spirit of cooperation is needed to broadcast this transcendental message of the Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the polluted atmosphere of the world. After all, it is a technical science of spiritual values, and thus we are concerned with the techniques and not with the language. If the techniques of this great literature are understood by the people of the world, there will be success. When there are too many materialistic activities by the people in general all over the world, there is no wonder that a person or a nation attacks another person or a nation on slight provocation. That is the rule of this age of Kali or quarrel. The atmosphere is already polluted with corruption of all descriptions, and everyone knows it well. There are so many unwanted literatures full of materialistic ideas of sense gratification. In many countries, there are bodies appointed by the state to detect and censor obscene literature. This means that neither the government nor the responsible leaders of the public want such literature, yet it is in the marketplace because the people want it for sense gratification. The people in general want to read, that is a natural instinct, but because their minds are polluted, they want such literatures. Under the circumstances, transcendental literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam will not only diminish the activities of the corrupt mind of the people in general, but also it will supply food for their hankering, and after reading some interesting literature, In the beginning, they may not like it because one suffering from jaundice is reluctant to take sugar candy, but we should know that sugar candy is the only remedy for jaundice. Similarly, let there be systematic propaganda for popularizing reading of the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, which will act like sugar candy for the jaundice-like condition of sense gratification. When men have a taste for this literature, the other literatures, which are catering poison to society, will then automatically cease. We are sure, therefore, that everyone in human society will welcome Srimad Bhagavatam, even though it is now presented with so many faults, for it is recommended by Sri Narada, who has very kindly appeared in this chapter. So yesterday we heard about the literatures which are materialistic and which therefore attract persons who are considered no better than crows. In other words, literatures which are describing that which is rejected by sensible persons. Because crows feast on the rejected matter. Now today's verse describes transcendental literature. Literature which is attractive to swan-like men. And Srila Prabhupada quotes a statement by Chanaka that a swan-like person is a person who knows how to take the essence and leave aside what is unwanted. Because swans have a special technique of being able to drink a mixture of water and milk, take the milk and leave aside the water. They have this special ability. Similarly, those who are rasika, or able to relish, they know how to accept what is especially relishable and leave aside what is not. And some examples are given here of taking gold from an unclean place, or to accept transcendental knowledge even if it comes from a person who was born in the family of Chandalas. This Srimad Bhagavatam has been described in the beginning, Nigama kalpa tador galitam valam sukamukad amrita drava samyutam pibata bhagavatam rasamalayam muhur aho rasika bhuvi bhavakaha. So, it is a special literature which is considered to be the ripened fruit on the Vedic tree of Vedic knowledge. The tree of Vedic knowledge means that this tree has many branches and leaves. In the Bhagavad Gita, those are described as sections, karmakanda, gyanakanda, sections of the Vedas, are many of the leaves and branches which are lower down on the tree. They also produce a certain type of fruit, karma kanda. The fruit of karma is sense gratification, and the fruit of jnana is liberation. So these are also found, or the means to achieve these types of fruits are also found in the Vedas. Triveda Vishaya. Triguna Vishaya Veda Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna. But Krishna instructs Arjuna that this sections of the Vedas are actually under the influence of the three modes of nature. Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna. He tells Arjuna, you have to rise above these three. Just like we see in the Kali Yuga, the Brahmins, who are supposed to be in the mode of goodness, they often fall prey to false ideas. For example, Srila Prabhupada was obstructed by these class-conscious Brahmins who were able to follow regulative principles very strictly, but who could not understand what the real goal of transcendental knowledge was. Nothing new. During the time of Lord Krishna, there were Brahmins who Krishna and Balaram came to beg food from. If you recall from Krishna book, Krishna and Balaram sent their friends to beg food because they were hungry, and the Brahmins were busy in yajna, fire sacrifice, for the purpose of propitiating perhaps some demigods, getting some fulfillment of their desire. They rejected the request of the friends of Krishna and Balaram. So, at the end, when their wives, who were actually devotees of the Lord's, gave and came out and to the forest and brought all of the foodstuffs which had been prepared for the yajna and satisfied Krishna and Balaram, when the Brahmins realized that what had happened, that the Lord, the Yajnishvaras, the Lords of Sacrifice, Bhaktaram Yajnatapa Sam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, that Krishna and Balaram were actually the Lords of this sacrifice, and that they realized that we could not recognize that the Lords themselves had come directly to us, even with our performing the sacrifice, we had not yet performed it. This is the goal of sacrifice, to have the Supreme Lord appear. Even without doing so, the Lords came of their own, but we could not recognize them because of our strong material desires. Therefore, it is said, Bogai Shraya Prashaktanam Vyaparita Chaitasam Vyavasat Buddhi Samado Navidiyate. For those who are too much attached to enjoyment and sense gratification, opulent life, they cannot appreciate the goal of Krishna consciousness. They have no determination, no fixed determination. So the Brahmins cursed themselves. They said, to hell with these yajnas, to hell with our austerities, to hell with all of this, they said, because it has blocked us from actually understanding what the real purpose is. And the real purpose, Vedeshya Sarvera Hameva Vedyo, Krishna is to be understood by Vedic study. So, this is the real goal. Therefore, it is said, Sat karma viparo nibro. Even if one is expert in mantra, in tantra, it doesn't matter. Even if one is a qualified Brahmin, expert in the six different divisions or even 12 divisions of what Brahmins do, it is of no value if they don't know the science of Krishna. But if one knows the science of Krishna, he's better than a Brahmin. Therefore, we are advised to go beyond this. So, it mentions that Srimad Bhagavatam, in this third verse of the first canto, is the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge. The ripened fruits generally come on the top branches. Just like if you look at a mango tree, you'll see that the fruits which are on the top branches ripen first, because they are more directly exposed to the sun. And therefore, the best fruits are usually found at the top, and you have to have the help of someone to get it. So they are the fully matured fruit, galitam phalam. And it is mentioned that this fully matured fruit has been passed down through the auspices of Sri Sukadeva Goswami and his representatives. Because the system of getting a fruit from the top of the tree down to the bottom is that it has to be passed down from guru to disciple, at least this knowledge, from one person to another. Here, the ripened fruit, that is to say, Srimad Bhagavatam, it has to be passed down through the proper channels. And what kind of fruit is this? Sukha-mukhadam-rita-drava-samyutam. Amrita means nectar, and drava means semi-solid and soft, and easily swallowable. So, because jnana is not soft, and karma is full of thorns, fruitive activities are full of thorns. We know that. as we try to enjoy sense gratification, we suffer more than we enjoy. Everyone has this experience. And that's why we're here in Krishna consciousness, because we have experienced the bitter fruit of so-called material pleasure. So even though it looks very tempting, Maya is very tempting, why are we resisting Maya? Because we know from the past that it's simply a trap. It's a false allurement, you know. It looks nice, but actually we know we will suffer. So it is like that. Karma is like that. Karma, the whole effort to achieve fruitive activities and the goals in them. You can see people want to get rich quick or, you know, to do something like that. But they suffer so much along the way. So, that is not semi-solid and soft and easily swallowable. If you get a fruit which, you know, has these qualities of thorns in it or some difficult to swallow pulp or seeds, then you can't swallow nicely. Or if it's not ripe. Just like liberation is a type, impersonal liberation is unripe. It is like someone wants to get free from material life and its suffering, so they go for liberation. So liberation is easy to achieve because it is mentioned that the Lord will easily award impersonal liberation, but He will not easily award bhakti. So bhakti is more difficult to achieve than mukti. So, in the same way, if you are impatient and you want to get free from suffering, you may take an unripened fruit of liberation. But if you want to actually get the satisfaction of the sweet fruit, that is to say of bhakti, you have to be very patient. And you have to, you know, receive it through the proper channel. Who are those proper persons? They are described to be Rasika Bhuvi Bhavukaha. They are expert, thoughtful persons. If you are expert and thoughtful, then you will understand those who are full in knowledge of the mellows. They are called Rasika. Thoughtful people search after hearing from persons who know how to relish the Srimad Bhagavatam. We should understand the Bhagavatam's message is attractive, as Prabhupada says, to persons who have taken the time to drink this nectar in a very slow and methodical way. If you try to get Srimad Bhagavatam, its nectar, too quickly, just like we see persons sometimes try to relish the 10th canto, pastimes of the Lord, but prematurely try to do so, then it will not have the desired effect. Sometimes we saw in India, persons would do this Bhagavad Katha, Bhagavad Saptaha. In 7 days, try to bring the audience immediately to the point of relishing the pastimes of Krishna. But actually, it's not possible. It is not possible in the sense that one has to go through the first 9 cantos before coming to the 10th canto. One has to know all of the glories of the Lord, how the Lord functions, how He incarnates, how His energies work, how He creates, how He protects, all of the details of God's creation, so that we actually fully appreciate the position of God. And then, understanding the position of God, we come to the point of relishing the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. So, therefore, Srila Prabhupada says, we worship the Lord with awe and reverence. And when naturally our spontaneous love for Krishna develops, then our worship will transform itself. But it will come naturally, just like to understand the 10th canto will gradually be there if we go through the first 9 cantos. And if we hear this subject from the lips of one who is relishing the subject matter, then it becomes naturally more relishable. Just like when we would hear from Srila Prabhupada, him speaking, and his acting and serving Krishna, because we could see that he was relishing service to Krishna, we also desired. So unless we see and hear from an associate with someone who is advanced, it will be difficult for us to develop the attraction to do devotional service. Therefore, association with advanced devotees is most highly recommended as the quickest way to make advancement on the path of spiritual life. So, this literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, is meant to bring about a revolution in the consciousness of men. That means that Srila Prabhupada came as a revolutionary personality. Now, certainly, governments don't like to allow revolutionaries to immigrate into their country. Perhaps if the government knew what was Srila Prabhupada's intent, they might not have allowed him to come. Because although America and many other countries say that they stand for, you know, one nation under God, or in God we trust, or morality, etc., etc., when we actually see what is going on in this country, it's hard to believe it. It's hard to believe it. Just like when you see all these adult movie shops, which are, you know, pornographic nightmares. And they're tolerated. They're encouraged. And it goes on and on and on and on. I mean, it's, you know, you can see how it is. When we were staying in Austin, we stayed in one motel. And they have some, you know, you can watch certain adult movies, and then it tells you that if the persons in the room want to make sure that the children don't watch them, they can inform the front desk, who will put on a block onto the screen so that the kids can't turn it on when their parents go out to the nightclub at night, leaving the kids in the motel. The kids may want to watch these movies, but you can inform the front desk how to prevent that. But the real question is, why are these movies available? Because the people want to make money. Hotel wants to make money. They want to cater to whatever the demands are. And the fact that the demands are, you know, more or less what animals would do doesn't seem to bother anyone. No one is even thinking anymore, what is the difference between a human and an animal? So certainly this is required, a revolution. Nothing short of a revolution is going to save this country. But we are told it has to be a peaceful revolution. When Lord Chaitanya wanted to make a violent revolution, right? First of all, his followers started to storm the Qazi's house. Lord Chaitanya said, wait, and he preached. But later on, when Lord Nityananda was hit on the head, and Lord Chaitanya wanted to cut off the head of Jagayan Madai, Lord Nityananda had to even request Lord Chaitanya, wait. So again and again, we see that the Vaishnavas' method of revolution is peaceful revolution. But it's peaceful in the sense of physical violence. But it's not peaceful in terms of what we're actually attempting to do. And we see that. Because as we start to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, there's often, you know, practically violent opposition. And it's expected, Prabhupada said, because we're living in an age of sudras, where the majority of the population are not even sudras, but they're much lower than sudras. So still, a little bit of a good thing is good. Unfortunately, there's a great deal of the bad thing. There's a great deal of materialism being spread. And the number of Vaishnavas, preaching Vaishnavas, is very few. But still, we have to do it. And Chaitanya Chaitamrita said, Mahanta Svabhava e Tarite Praman Nija Karya Nahitabu Yanha Tara Ghara. This instruction is found. It is the practice of all saintly people to deliver the fallen, and therefore they go to people's houses, although they have no personal business there. This is our business, preaching Krishna consciousness. We don't have any material reason to approach people, whether we go to their homes or meet them in the streets or in the parking lots or airports, wherever we may happen to meet them. It is not for some material business of our own that we're doing transactions. Just like this restaurant, Kalachandra, it is not for some personal aggrandizement that we have established it. It is to do good for the people. Para upakar. This is the duty of everyone. Especially, Prabhupada says, because it is said in Chaitanya Chaitamrita, especially those who were born in India. Bharak bhumi teho manushya janmajar. Janra sartika kadikara para upakar. Para upakar means to do good to others. And what is that best benefit or good that you can do for others? Obviously, to help them to get free from the cycle of birth and death. Hospitals, other welfare work is not the highest benefit. The highest benefit is no more death and no more birth again. And this was especially the duty of the people of India. And therefore Prabhupada said that India is suffering now because they have failed to do their duty. We see so many people from India coming into America. Why? To make money. And if they do open temples, they have no interest to invite any Western people, because the only reason even for their temples is to preserve their own, you know, culture, which they think is for sense enjoyment. They have no idea what is the real goal of Krishna consciousness. So we don't find practically any foreign people outside the Indian community in the Indian community temples, because they have no sense of preaching. They didn't come here to benefit the people of this country. Prabhupada was very angry with one girl who raised her hand in a lecture in Berkeley. She challenged Prabhupada that, why have you come here offering, you know, this? America doesn't need this. And Prabhupada was furious and said, you are simply a beggar. I mean, she was, you know, she thought she was real hot stuff going to the University of California, Berkeley. You know, she thought she was going to, you know, identify herself with all the other Americans and show everyone that she didn't identify with this old-fashioned Swami who had come, you know, to peddle his religion in America. And Prabhupada put it right in her place. Prabhupada just said, you're just a beggar. I mean, in India, beggars are of the lowest, poorest class. And here was a girl who was, you know, obviously an intellectual, whose parents could afford to send her overseas. Prabhupada called her a beggar. He said, you have just come to beg Western technology. He said, I came here to give them something. And the whole audience started applauding. So, you know, Prabhupada made the point that if the Indian people will not do their duty, he said, therefore, he said, I am so much appreciative of people all over the world who have come to help this one Indian who has come out of India. Of course, there are some Indians who are also assisting. But generally we see that the Krishna consciousness movement, at least overseas, is not being spread by Indians. But there are huge numbers of Indians. You know, the Indian population right now, per capita in the United States, is the richest population in the United States. But they hardly do what they could do. On the other hand, we see that, for example, the Muslims, they propagate their religion all over the world. So it is, therefore, it is not a wonder. It is not surprising when India has to suffer so many calamities. People sometimes wonder, why is it that if India is the land of Dharma, then India has to suffer so much? Because the people of India have neglected so much. What is their actual duty? Now, we should not be put into the same position. Because just as they should have done better because they knew better, so similarly you must do better because you know better. If, you know, being a devotee for so many years and hearing transcendental knowledge for so many years and practicing as you are, you don't go out and give this knowledge to others, then you fall into the same category as the people of India. And what will happen? Calamity will strike. It must strike. Because there is a price, you see, which you have to pay for all that you're receiving. And that price is that you have to give it to others. There's no other alternative. That's the only way that you can fulfill the indebtedness for receiving transcendental knowledge. You must give it to others. Must give it to others means that this is an entire movement for doing so. But you must offer some valuable service towards this movement without any, you know, return, thinking that I'm doing it in a fruitive way, because that is not bhakti. Then you don't get freed from your obligation. If you offer service with the idea that I'm getting something in return, it is not bhakti. So somehow there must be some sacrifice, whatever it may be. Return must be minimal. Not that, I mean, if someone gets basic maintenance, we don't necessarily consider that return. But one should not have a profit-making thought process going on when doing devotional service. Krishna will maintain his devotees. Prabhupada did not disapprove of that. If someone was rendering service which was considered essential, Prabhupada had no objection that they should be maintained by the deity in a simple way. But we should not be thinking, obviously, of doing a business with Krishna. That we should not think of. And by and large, we should make ourselves available for helping to benefit others. Yare daki tare kaha, Krishna upadesh, amara gai guru hai tare desh. Everyone should become guru. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not say you, but not you. He said all. Everyone. And how to be a guru? Go out and whoever you meet, you talk to them about this subject. Srimad Bhagavatam. Why? Because this Bhagavatam is very, very special. It is described that it is the means for curing the disease of materialism. In the 10th canto, Nivritti Tarsher Upagiyamanat Bhavasatosh Chotra Mano Bidyamanat Yaka Uttama Shloka Gunanavadat Puman Virajeta Vina Pashuganat. Srila Prabhupada quoted this verse, Bhavasatosh Chotra Mano Bidyamanat. This is the medicine, Srimad Bhagavatam, the topics, Ka Uttama Shloka Gunanavadat. Topics about the Supreme Lord, Uttama Sloka, the Lord who is glorified by beautiful verses. To hear these topics is the medicine that can cure the disease of materialism. It is very special medicine. People don't understand what disease they're suffering from. People think, am I suffering from cancer? Am I suffering from nervousness or overwork or anxiety? But all of these diseases go under one ultimate heading, materialism. You are suffering because you have come into the material world. And everything else is symptomatic. It's a symptom of material life that you get cancer. It's a symptom of material life that you get anxiety. It's a symptom of material life that you become depressed. It's a symptom of material life for all ills. Whether it's, you know, ills of the body, the mind, from other living entities or natural disturbances, this is the nature of material life. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam is dukkha. The whole world is a place of suffering. And there's only one medicine that can get you free from this suffering, and that is to develop a tendency or desire to hear the glorification of the Lord. And if all of your endeavors don't develop that desire, then shrama evihi kevalam, you have wasted your time. You have wasted your time. This is the medicine. And somehow or other, force feed, if not voluntary, you got to take the medicine. You know, just like when a baby is sick, you know, the mother holds him down and the doctor gives the medicine, injection, forcefully, even though the baby may be struggling like anything. So we are like babies and we are struggling like anything. We don't want to take the medicine. It's very difficult because the medicine appears to be bitter. Actually, it is not bitter, Prabhupada said. The medicine is sweet, but we are so much diseased that we think it is bitter. And that which is really bitter, which is bitter like anything, we think is sweet. Therefore, materialism is said to be sweet in the beginning, bitter at the end. But spiritual life is bitter in the beginning, sweet at the end. It is bitter. It's bitter to have to get up early in the morning, you know. It's bitter to have to come and, you know, even though your mind wanders, to chant your rounds. It's bitter to have to live in a community where sometimes you may not get along with everyone. It's bitter to not just, you know, be able to do whatever you want to do at any time. What to speak of reading literatures. I mean, that's not something you even have to do to keep alive. You keep breathing without reading. But you can't get free from the ultimate disease of being trapped in the material world if you don't read these books, if you don't hear this message. So we have to do two things. On the one hand, we have to keep living, but on the other hand, we have to get out of this type of life. We don't want a suicide because suicide doesn't get you out. You come back again, and in a worse condition. So you can't suicide. Just like if you think, I'll run away. You can't run away. Sometimes devotees run away. Well, where do they run to? They run right back into the material world, which is the cause of their suffering. And they only put off what's inevitable. I mean, it's inevitable that you have, Prabhupada said, once you take up Krishna consciousness, Krishna won't forget you. So, you know, you've got a long rope. Krishna's like an expert fisherman. He'll give you a lot of lead if you want it. Like if people know about fishing, you know, sometimes if you want to catch small fish, you don't have to give them any lead. You just, if you find them biting, you just pull them in fast. That's all. But if it's a big fish, if you watch these people go deep sea fishing, you know, those fish are like half a mile away sometimes. Those big, whatever they are, you know, the tarpons, I don't know what they're called. Like sharks and things. They go far, far out, and you can see they're just letting out the line. And half of catching them is to let them get exhausted. Practically, the way to catch a big fish is you let him exhaust himself, because you can't fight against his strength, or you'll get pulled in. So, you know, Krishna uses that same method. If you want to be a big fish out there in the material world, Krishna will give you plenty of line. You know, and you can run around until you get exhausted. But sooner or later, he's going to wheel you in because you're hooked. Prabhupada said, if you chant Hare Krishna even one time sincerely, you're on Krishna's hook. And you don't get free. So if you're a little bit smart, you'll think, I'm already hooked. And this moving about in the material world for a little bit more pleasure, it's just like a fish. Imagine if a fish is hooked. You know, and he thinks, because he's not feeling the tugging of the line, he thinks, I'm free. And he can do so many things. He can copulate with some other fish, or he can eat another smaller fish. But, you know, after a while, suddenly, he feels the hook in his mouth, and he realizes, wow, I'm still on the hook. So that's what happens. They go away. You know, they drive away, they fly away, they do so many things to get free and escape. And they think, now I'm free, I can enjoy. And then suddenly they feel the hook. That hook may come in different forms. It may come in suddenly a crash of the, you know, plan. The plan crashes. Not plane, I said plan. Whatever the plan may be. My plan for escape and enjoyment in the material world suddenly fails. And there I am again with the same circumstance which brought me to Krishna consciousness. Or some situation happens. And you never know how long it takes. Devotees sometimes leave. They leave for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, even 10 or 15 years. And you may say, well, it doesn't sound so bad. At least they get it out of their system. But so much time is lost. And when they come back again, their bodies are older. And they have all this pollution and rot in their minds from those 15 years away that they now have to chant even harder to get free from. You may think it's easier, but it's not easier. It makes it more difficult. Therefore, you have to find out, just like Gajendra, in the story of Gajendra and the elephant, you know, the elephant and the crocodile, Prabhupada comments in the purport, you have to situate yourself in a proper position where you can fight with the Maya. Where your senses and mind are strong enough to fight with Maya. Because somehow or other, we don't want to give up the fight. This is what Prabhupada says in the purport. Somehow or other, don't give up the fight. So you have to situate yourself in a place or in a way or in an ashram, whatever it may be, where you can fight strongly with Maya and not go down in the fight. Because to go down, we don't want to admit defeat. This is, as Prabhupada said, this is a revolutionary movement meant to do revolution. So revolutionaries have to be very strong and hardy. They have to be able to survive under any circumstance. When you're creating a revolution, revolution means you're fighting against the establishment.
That means that we are fighting against the establishment. What is the establishment? It is the fortress of Maya. It is the kingdom of Kali. We are living in the kingdom of Kali. Kali has taken over. This is Kali Yuga, and he has taken over this world. And we are citizens in that kingdom who are trying to create revolution. A revolutionary has to be very smart and very tough. So, you know, we should be very careful, because sometimes, living in the kingdom, we may become accustomed to the ways of the enemy, in Maya or Kali. We may start to think it's not so bad, and we may think, I'll give up the revolution. This is a great loss. A great loss. Sometimes, because of the Krishna's kindness, he may give facilities. Just like here, he's given pretty nice facilities. It is pretty nice. Everybody has their own home, the householders, or when the brahmacharis do visit here, they have a nice, right room. You know, it's all air conditioned, central heated, and spick and span, and everybody thinks, oh, this is pretty nice. Prabhupada said, our temples are not meant simply for eating and sleeping. What are they, Prabhupada said? They're arsenals, armories. Just like when we went to New York, when we go to the Brooklyn Temple, you go down that Atlantic Avenue, you know, through hell, one of the most hellish neighborhoods in the world. You go through down Atlantic Avenue, past this huge armory. It used to be that every city in America had these big armories where they would store arms. You know. So actually, Prabhupada said, the temples are armories. And the arms are, the weapons are, these books. And these temples are especially meant as places to store the books, pick up the books, and drop, you know, and distribute them, fire them at the enemy. So we should understand that. It is natural that married persons are allowed to live in the military compound. That's all right. We see that in everywhere in the world. People who are there, they can live with their families, no objection. But they always know I'm a soldier. Otherwise, what are they living at the? What are they living in the military compound? If you're not a soldier, what business do you have living in a military compound? So sometimes the problem is that we tend to forget that we're military people, and we start to think I'm a civilian. But if you're a civilian, then what are you living so near to here for? This is a place which is like an armory. This is a preaching place. And people who live here are supposed to be in a preaching mood. Not just in, you know, the mood of everything is all right. It's peacetime. It's not peacetime. It's wartime. This is very clearly stated here by Prabhupada and by Sukadeva Goswami. On the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, form, pastimes of the unlimited Supreme Lord is a different creation, full of transcendental words directed towards bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of the world's misdirected civilization. Very clear statement. So, we have devised a very good place here. This place is so nice that many people come here. Just like on Sunday, 400 people came here. Now, even if you don't or cannot go out and take the bombs and throw them outside, then you all right? Then we have such a good arrangement here that we have figured out how to draw people here. Then you preach to them when they come here. And they're coming. They're not only coming on the weekends, they even come during the week if you want to have that opportunity. You can make them come here more and more. And when they come here, they should be preached to. Because we should understand that there is an obligation that comes to living near a temple. Otherwise, you know, it will not be the fulfillment of Prabhupada's purpose with these temples. So we will stop here and ask if there are any comments or questions. Sarvabhauma Das. Everyone
feels that everyone's serving Krishna in some way.
I didn't say that today, but that is it is said. I didn't say it, but it is said.
But then the great devotees, they still want to preach and help the Lord's plan, but they feel that everyone's already kind of serving Krishna.
Okay, so his point is that an Uttamadhikari sees that everyone is serving Krishna except himself, but if they want to go out and preach. So the point is that an Uttamadhikari, by the arrangement of Krishna, comes to the Madhyam platform. And from the Madhyam platform, they don't see that everyone is serving Krishna. They see that practically no one is serving Krishna. Otherwise, an Uttamadhikari remaining on the Uttama platform, externally, internally, will not preach. So by the arrangement of Krishna, the Uttam Bhagavat comes to the Madhyam platform. And and with that Madhyam vision, he sees so many people need Krishna consciousness. But we don't have to worry. We have to try to come up to the Madhyam platform, not down to the Madhyam platform. We should not be so... Our problem is, you know, if we're from the Kanista platform, they also don't want to preach. The Kanista doesn't preach, and the Uttama doesn't preach. We should not become confused in thinking that the reason I don't have a desire to preach is that I'm an Uttam Bhagavat. I'm a Kanista personality, you see. And I think that actually, you know, everything's... I'm fine, and everything else is okay.
The Uttamadhikari has transcendent compassion, since he's not feeling
anything. That's not transcendent compassion. He's just absorbed... He's not. He's absorbed in his relationship with the Lord. And he feels so humbled by his own incapabilities. He's overwhelmed by his humility. Not that he's not compassionate. He would like to be, but he feels so incapable due to his own shortcoming. Yes, Radha.
On the same topic, one time the question was raised, Uttam Bhakta is feels so humble, then how is that he oversees?
I gave the answer. He comes to the Madhyam platform.
No, my question is how remaining in the Uttam platform, how, not for the sake of preaching, but he remains in Uttam Bhakta, and he sometimes doesn't follow the rules and regulations.
So
the question is,
the reason he doesn't, if an Uttam Bhakta doesn't follow the rules and regulations, it's not because he thinks I'm so lowly, therefore I should follow him. It's because he's immersed in samadhi. It's not, at that point, he's not even thinking externally, I'm so low on this. If he doesn't follow rules and regulations, it's because he's immersed in samadhi. Actually, it is also stated, it's very hard to understand the mind of a liberated person. Therefore, we cannot fully understand the behaviors. I think it's more important that we understand the behavior of a Madhyamadhikari, because we're supposed to come to the Madhyam platform. So it would be better for us to understand what is a Madhyam Bhakta like and what is a Kanista Bhakta. Then we'll know what we should not be like and what we should be like. So instead of trying to tax our brain to understand what is the behavior of an Uttam Bhakta, first of all, understand what is the behavior of a Kanista and what is the behavior of a Madhyam. Then we may gradually understand what is also Uttam.
In one of the conversation books, in India, I forget which city, but it was Scoopman in there challenging Prabhupada about Bhagavad Gita. He was very, very powerfully smashing them if they didn't understand Bhagavad Gita. And they started challenging him about this verse, and I have something they've only ever had to say, how to see, about seeing equally. They were thinking that a real sadhu should be somebody who just
Chaitanya Chandra says that when the conversation book, it describes Prabhupada describing the verse Vidivinaya Sampani, that equal vision, Prabhupada said, my equal vision is that I think everyone should be hearing about Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada ki,
yes.
Sankirtan Yajna ki,
yes.
Gaur Premanandi.
Yes.